supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. As many of you know, last week I announced that as of November 23rd, I'd no longer be doing my weekly radio show, but I'll transition to 6 bi-monthly annual specials, and I'll continue my morning editions with Mike and Scott. But boy, was it a tough decision, and I struggled with it for close to a year. But all of us face questions surrounding the question, when is it time? When is it time throughout the life cycle? Today's show is an open show, and we're looking forward to getting your calls and your thoughts about what's happened throughout your life cycle around the issue of when is it time? Did you decide? Did you decide not to decide? How did you decide? Looking forward to hearing from you at 888-477-9499. So when is it time to get married, to end a marriage, to change your career, to end a career, to take the car keys away from our parents, to give car keys to our teenagers? Well, that should get us started. Joining me is my dear friend, psychiatrist Barbara Wingate. Barbara, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's always great to see you across a desk from me. So this decision to end my weekly radio show was the hardest I've ever had to make. The hardest. It involved months of rumination, living with worst case scenario, entertaining best case scenario, and none of that addresses all of the tears. I cried like I don't ever remember crying around this possibility. But like I said earlier, it's not unusual. All of us have similar experiences. Have you?
Of course.
Well, that's right. You're a human.
I was going to say, I don't know anybody who gets through life without having, because really you're talking about decision-making, and decision-making involves excitement, but it also involves fear, and oftentimes it involves loss. And I guess I want to ask first, aside from your tears, was there some excitement?
Yeah, there is some excitement about the possibilities. You know, I say half jokingly, there's some excitement about reading the New York Times on a Monday, you know, in the morning. But yeah, there's excitement. I want to work with populations I couldn't afford to work with before. It's a leap of faith because I know I have something in there that will be in there when I'm not sitting in front of, whether I'm sitting in front of a microphone or not. So, yeah, there's a lot of those issues going on. And yes, there's excitement.
I think that's something that people often forget when they're in the midst of a hard decision. You know, it's easy to focus on what you might be losing or what you're fearful about the future. But actually, if you can just step aside for a second, there's almost always some excitement in there, and I think you're making opportunity for that's really important. I remember there's an old saying about when a hurricane comes, some people batten down the hatches and they're making sure that everything's secure and they're frightened of all the waves that are coming. And you know what the surfers are saying?
Yeah.
Waves! We've got waves coming. This is so great. And there's a little to learn from both sides, I think.
Yeah. So, tell me your story.
Which one? You know, I think the older we get, we have so many stories. And I...
What was the most difficult?
What was the most difficult? I think that probably the most difficult is knowing, for me, when to end a relationship, because relationships are so important to me, and when a relationship is really dead and you have to move on from it. And I think for those of us who are in the business of promoting attachment and loving attachment as we do in our work, I think any time that I've had to make a decision to end a relationship, it's just agony. And it's really hard for me to look at the excitement part of it, and I have to do a lot of grieving.
That is one of the common denominators, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's grieving. It's a tremendous, tremendous loss. And that's what the tears are about. Yours and your transition, mine and my transition. It's about grief.
And grief on many levels. I mean, sometimes you're having grief for yourself. Sometimes you're having grief for a child if you're going through a divorce. Sometimes you're having a grief for just a loss of someone to share memories with. I mean, you have a whole team here that you can walk out the door and they know so many things. I mean, not to walk out the door every day and have that. And, you know, whether you're leaving a job or whether you're leaving a marriage, I think that's for particularly those of us who are attachment, for, you know, completely, that's who we are. Then I think that's really hard, too.
We're talking with Barbara Wingate, psychiatrist Barbara Wingate, and we're talking about transitions in life, but not transitions that happen to us, the decisions we have to make during transitions and how we make those decisions, you know, when to end a relationship and what goes into that decision. We're talking about grief as a common denominator. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your questions, and most of all, we'd love to hear your experiences about your transitions.
And hey, you can call in and also tell Dan that we just don't find this acceptable. This is just not acceptable. He's our anchor. He's been here for I don't know how long. So I'm sitting here across from him thinking, no, I don't want you to go from being here every week.
And you know what, Barb? This is part of my grief, too. When you talk about relationships, I mean, yeah, we are all about relationships, all humans. And it's a loss of relationships on both sides because, you know, the love and affection that is felt for me, I also feel so. Yeah, it was a very, very difficult. And lots of grief involved. Go on.
If nobody's called yet, then I'm going to ask, what was most helpful to you in finally knowing that it was time to go? Was it an intellectual? Was it friends? Or was it more just a visceral, I have a feeling?
Yeah, it was visceral. There were times when I'd come to the station on a Monday and I was conscious of all the people I didn't know.
Huh.
You know, the younger people who were here, and I'd watch as I was going over last minute details for the show, and I'd look at all these young people and all their enthusiasm and what a bright future they have, I hope. Anyway, and I just realized at that moment I was tired. You know, I didn't have all that energy and I wasn't focused on my future anymore, that contrast. And that's what weighed into it. I became aware of where I was and who I was and how I felt and how my body felt. And that guided me as much as my intellect, as weighing pros and cons and all that stuff. I got closer to me, to who I am and where I am. And I think my meditation practice helped.
I'm going to say that as an integrative physician and one who believes very much in the connection of body, mind, and spirit, I think too often people discount or don't pay enough attention to body and spirit. They're just listening to their mind, because you have enormous wisdom as you've grown in this. And so you could look at those young people and be excited about sharing wisdom, mentoring, doing all sorts of things. So I'm guessing, like there is for me in many situations, there's also a sense of, am I paying attention to my body wisdom? What does my body tell me right now? And I listen to people all the time, and you don't have to be old to feel tired. And I think...
But it helps.
What do you mean it helps? Helps to be old or helps to be tired?
No, you don't have to be old to be tired, but it helps. Being old helps being tired. I find it comes more easily as I age.
I think that's probably true, but I listen to enough tired young people. And in this day and age, with the incredible amount of stimulus and expectations that we have, I'm impressed how many tired younger people there are, and actually how many people who are wisely using their energy as they age, and they don't really experience fatigue. But it you have to be wise about that, and I think you can really pass some of that wisdom on to people who are younger, who are just throwing away their energy, and they're exhausted in ways that sort of astonish me and worry me.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to the phones. We've got Val on the line. Hey, Val.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have an elderly parent who is in the throes of making some decisions that will cause her to lose some independence, which she's fiercely holding on to. And those around her feel that it's time. And I don't know how to help her.
So let's talk specifics here, Val. What is it around? What is it you...
It's around handling your health and your medication. And otherwise, she's fairly independent. So she needs assistance with things that she's done all her life, almost her entire life. And she's, because she's elderly, she's not doing them as well as she did, and also they've become more complicated. So she needs some assistance, and she's resistant.
Yeah, and, well, in a way, both of you are, right? Because both of you are fairly convinced you're right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a problem when we have two right people arguing.
Right.
So why do you want her to change? And
because
I want the answer to be below your neck. You know what I mean?
Below my neck. I want her to be safe. There have been some incidences where she hasn't been safe, and there have been hospitalizations and problems, and I want her to be safe.
What's the emotion?
What's the emotion?
Yeah.
I guess it's fear.
Okay.
And responsibility.
Okay. All right. But the emotion, I'm going to stick with the emotion. The emotion is fear. Right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I would suggest holding on to that, because that's really important, is that emotion. And if you bring that emotion to the discussion, maybe you could explore your mother's emotion, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two frightened people here.
I would think so.
And that's different from being two correct people.
Right.
I'm watching Barbara Wingate across the desk, and I see that you want to jump in.
I do, because one of the questions I have, and this is where you have to get to specifics, is she making someone other than herself unsafe?
No. Not at this point. With some adjustments, so.
That's a very big one. And when you're not making someone else unsafe, to allow someone to retain independence for as long as possible makes sense. If you are making someone else unsafe, then really, I think, and these are some of the harder decisions that I've been involved in personally and professionally over the course of my life. I think if you're making someone else unsafe, then you have a responsibility to not harm other people by allowing someone who's not safe to be, say, driving or wandering around mm-hmm. where they could get hit by a car or something. But if mm-hmm. if they're not making themselves unsafe, I tend to err on the side of letting someone make their own decisions for as long as possible. Because that is a huge loss when that goes away.
Ultimately,
I understand what you're saying, but what I'm concerned about is then, and I've thought about this, you know, she's an adult. She gets to choose. But then she'll go from hospitalization to hospitalization. And the quality of life will be so very different than what it can be.
Have you had this discussion with her about, A, your fear, and B, mm-hmm. what your fears are about? Has she told you about her fears and what her fears were about? Because ultimately, Val, ultimately where this discussion goes is it's about life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to hold on to your mother, I assume, for as long as possible. Yes? And she wants to hold on to her life as long mm-hmm. as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I would strongly suggest that you address the anxiety and that ultimately it's about life and death and not about medication. That's a symptom. But what kind of life do you want between now and the time you go? And mm-hmm. what's it like being your age? You know, I asked my dad that. I said, what's it like having a future that's so short and a history that's so long? Help me understand what it feels mm-hmm. like to be in that position. That's a whole mm-hmm. different kind of discussion you can have. And what it is it's two family members who love each other sharing an intimate conversation. But as long as it's around medication, you're going to get stuck.
I think that's a great mm-hmm. point.
What yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and I wish you and your parent the best. Take
thank
care.
Thank you, and you as well. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Val. Barbara, we've got a lot of callers who want to join the conversation. I've also got a clock in front of me that's ticking, so we're going to take a very short break, 60-second break. And when we come back, I want to get specific here about children and letting them go and allowing them to fail, and more specifically about ending marriages and how we make that decision and ending jobs. You know, all the easy questions.
Okay, I'll be ready.
We're talking with integrative psychiatrist Dr. Barbara Wingate about the big questions about these transition questions. Our number is 888-477-9499. Feel free to call around any of these issues at 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY FM.
Supporting WHYY, Yampolsky Law PC, a law firm based in Tree Rose, Pennsylvania, focused on transforming conflict through mindful practices of collaborative law, mediation, family law, and labor and employment law. More information at conflicttransformed.com.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's Caron.org.
The Philadelphia Inquirer is a proud supporter of WHYY and is publishing an official souvenir hardcover coffee table book of the Pope's historic visit to Philadelphia. Learn more about how you can obtain this souvenir volume at www.2015popebook.com.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're here with my dear friend, colleague, integrative psychiatrist Barbara Wingate. We're talking about transitions in life, I guess secondary to my decision to transition from a weekly radio show as of November 23rd to bi-monthly specials. So we're talking about transitions in general, not just retirement, or in my case it's not retirement, but leaving something that's been precious to me for 30 years, but transitions in general. So we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts, your experiences, your questions at 888-477-9499. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Amma on the line. Amma, I hope I didn't mess up your name too badly.
No, that was pretty much on the mark. Alma is my name, yes.
What can we do for you?
I'm going through a separation right now. I'm actually married, and I feel that 3 years into the marriage, I've come to the conclusion that we're not compatible, but I feel like I harbor most of the feelings and most of the, you know, I harbor everything, and she just doesn't care, doesn't give me, like, I have nothing to put my finger on when it comes to her, but when it comes to me, all my cards are on the table. So once, when you were talking about being visceral and things of that nature, like, when it comes to me and my wife, I have every instinct in me that tells me that we're not compatible, but I just feel the need to, I need her to tell me that, like, we're not compatible instead of just stringing me along, stringing me along, stringing me along.
How come?
There's a huge age gap. I'm in my late 20s. She's in her early 20s. And she's the reason why we're together. I believe I'm the glue that holds us together, that why we're together now, because of the way that I am. But I feel the need to move on, but I deserve an explanation, and I'm not getting it. And I think that's what's beating me up inside.
Barbara.
I'm getting no explanation. I'm getting no type of nothing, no feedback, no solid feedback. And solidarity is what I reside on. And her life is always an aloof. She takes things on a whim. Every day is a new day. She takes everything a day at a time and stuff like that. And it's like nothing is, she doesn't take anything serious to me. And even me, the one person that she chose to marry, it's like, I'm not, even me, she won't take me serious.
I'll tell you the one thing that's coming through very clearly before I ask Barbara to weigh in. The one thing that comes through very clearly is that you are not getting something here that you want, feel you need, something is important to you. But if we have time, I'd like to kind of unpack that and see exactly what that it is that you're not getting, that you want, maybe have wanted your whole marriage, if not more. Barbara?
My first question is, have you had any help with this? Are you talking to someone, or are you two together talking to someone? Because when we're alone with these frustrations, they can take on a magnitude and a life of their own that if actually you have a trusted friend, spiritual guide, you know, religious leader, or a counselor, they can often help you sort of tease apart, and they lose some of the drama, but they don't lose the clarity. It's not that we want you to settle for something that you shouldn't settle, but it might. Are you seeing anyone to get any help with this?
That's interesting that you say that, because the one person, I have a relative that I always will go to that's been married for years. So she's like, this lady's like my aunt. I mean, she's like a mother to me, but she's my aunt, and I go to her for almost about everything. But I stopped going to her because I felt like her advice, her cues, and things that were guided by the heart through her marriages and things like that were all from one point of view, and I believe that that's exactly what I was doing. I was settling, going to her, getting advice, and taking her advice and applying it to my relationship. And it was like, yeah, I'm settling. And that was beating me up, because the advice I was getting, I felt like I was only from a female's point of view. It wasn't ideal for me to apply it to my relationship as a man.
What do you want?
Hello?
Yes, what do you want, Omar?
I want someone that's going to share their emotions with me as much as I'm going to share with them. Because when I stepped into my relationship, I'm detached. That's the type of person I am. I'm detached, emotionally detached. But once I opened up, it's like she closed that door on me. She told me to open that door, and I opened it, and then she closed her door.
So if I'm in your position, and that happened to me, I'd be hurt, I'd feel alone, almost abandoned, I'd feel sad, and I'd feel a bit alienated in my own home. Now, I don't know about you, and maybe...
That's how I felt. I felt like if something dire were to happen, I would be on my own.
All right, so don't go so fast here, okay? So does she know that that's what you feel? Does she know how lonely you feel in this marriage? Without accusing her of anything, does she know how lonely you were?
Yes.
You've told her?
I think that's one of the problems. Like, I think I've expressed that too much, that I haven't been doing that now. I feel like I've said all I needed to say. I don't know what to say.
Do you want to stay in this marriage?
I don't know. I don't think so. I do, but I need something to make me want to stay. Right now, there's nothing that makes me want to stay.
Do you want to work on this marriage?
I've been working on it. Like at this point, after last month, I'm ready to give up. I am. I'm ready to give up. Not in a bad way, but in a positive way, and just move forward positively.
Tell me. Go on, Barbara.
Well, I'm going to go back to that getting help, because so far you went to a trusted aunt, but she's not objective. It really might be helpful to go to someone that you find objective, that they can listen to you and you can look at pros and cons. And actually, something I want you to think about is looking at values, because that's a big part of it. You know, are you going to make a decision that's consistent with your values? And I think going to an objective person rather than someone who has values maybe similar to yours, like your aunt, but then quite different, it really might be helpful. And certainly if you could get your wife to go with you. So those two things, I haven't heard yet that you're done exploring that.
We've touched the topic of counseling, but like I said before, I'm the one that's always like, once we talk about it, I'll be the one pushing towards it. I'll be the one nagging about it. I'll be the one. Then it'll be on me again. It'll be my job to for us both to follow through with it.
Well, you know, it sounds like you've got your own thoughts and ideas, and I would just guess that if you could talk these through with someone objective, you might be more comfortable with where you are right now. Because what we've been hearing throughout this conversation is your own discomfort in this marriage. And I would want you to be comfortable, more comfortable, with whatever decision you make. And I agree with Barbara 100%. And somebody who is objective and is able to listen carefully to you and give you feedback could help you be more comfortable inside your own skin, more comfortable, not perfectly comfortable, but more comfortable with where you are. Unfortunately, we've got to go. We've got a lot of callers who want to join the conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
I do hope
Thank
it was
you.
Helpful. Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Thank you, Emma. So there we have it. You know, I mean, it's so difficult to make these decisions. You know, you lay your cards out, and you know, I've got people I've counseled over the years, hundreds, and all the evidence points to decision A. And you can't make decision A. There's something about it. You know, you wait for your partner to do X, Y, Z, or say X, Y, Z. You know, it's so hard. I there's something in our wiring, Barbara, that kind of pulls us back to sameness, to stability, to not changing.
Well, you and me, but not everybody. You're forgetting that whole group of risk takers out there and adventurers, and they have to be acknowledged. There's a whole scale of normal. There's a continuum, and I think some of us are way on the attachment scale and some are way on the risk scale, and you can fall over into not helpful behavior on either side, but it's interesting. And I think very humbling over the years to have to admire some of the risk takers that I've seen.
Admire and sometimes almost envy.
Yeah, definitely.
So how we make these decisions. Now, sometimes we can be in a marriage over time or a job over time or a situation that will make us feel helpless and hopeless over a long period of time. And that's what we call depressogenic. I mean, we can wind up with a depression as a result of our environment. And then how do you make a decision? Because I think I can generalize, when someone is depressed, they're going to get smaller and withdraw.
Well, again, I'm back to, it does really help to have a trusted group of friends, family, counselors to help you understand when you're getting stuck. And really, even sometimes it's just one step that you need to take. It's, what was that movie, What About Bob? Baby step. You need to just take a baby step, and all of a sudden things unleash and you're not so depressed and you can move forward. But oftentimes we need someone to help us just to make that baby step even.
We're talking with Dr. Barbara Wingate, integrative psychiatrist, about transitions, about how we make these hard decisions, when to go and when to stay. And even I want to talk to you about a more difficult decision, and that is when to let our history. When is it time to do that? When is it time to forgive? When is it time to let go of grudges? And boy, every one of us can relate to that. Give us a call about these issues or others that relate to transition. 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Candy on the line. Hi, Candy.
9499.
Candy? We're going to have to ask you to turn your radio down.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Not very well. Could you turn your radio off?
Did I lose you, Dr. Dan?
No, you're going to have to turn your radio off.
Dr. Dan?
All right, we've got a bad connection here. Candy, maybe you could try to call back, and we'll if you can get a better connection, we'll take you after our break. And speaking of break, we're going to be back in just 60 short seconds and talk more about transitions and when is it time to forgive and let go of grudges that we've carried much of our lives. Our number is 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Are you interested in long-term weight loss? Then you may be eligible for a research study offered by Penn's Center for Weight and Eating Disorders. This 16-month research study combines a behavioral weight loss program with an FDA-approved weight loss medication. More information on how you may be eligible to participate at 215-746-5030. 215-746-5030. Support for WHYY comes from the Clean Air Council, reminding listeners that methane and other air pollution from oil and gas drilling can contribute to climate change and impact public health. More information about what Pennsylvania can do at cleanairpa.org.
Silver Lining Home Healthcare supports WHYY. Do you know a senior who needs some help with meal prep, hygiene, light housekeeping, and more? Silver Lining provides hourly or live-in care at home. Details at slhomecare.com.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host, talking with the integrative psychiatrist Barbara Wingate about transitions and the big picture of when is it time? How do we make these big decisions? I'd like to go right to the phones, as we've got several callers who want to join the conversation. Danica, do we have Danica on, Al?
You do. Hi.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Hi. So I was listening to your radio show as I'm driving between my jobs, and I thought it was really interesting, the transition piece of this, because I actually elected about, it's October 29th was my surgery, but I elected to become a below-the-knee amputee after a car accident, and so that was a gigantic transition for me because I'm 25, so I was young when all this happened. So it's been a roller coaster, and just listening to some of the stories, I can really relate. And so I just wanted to, you know, call in and say that I can definitely relate to a lot of this, and it's really interesting to listen to.
Relate to what? When you say a lot of this,
what? A lot of this, I mean, a lot of the emotions that go along with a huge transition in life. You know, any grieving stages that happen with a divorce or anything like that also happens with something like the loss of a limb. So it's just interesting because we can almost relate over all of these different topics. Even though they're completely different, the emotional rides are really similar.
You said elective. You chose.
Yes. Yes. I did.
How is that?
So it was... Say that again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, what goes into that?
So I'm an occupational therapist, so I have a background of amputation rehabilitation. However, when I was in school, I was in a car accident, broke both my ankles by having my feet on the dashboard, so don't do that, as a passenger, and ended up with 6 surgeries on my right ankle. I became so arthritic in that ankle that I wasn't able to really function in my job anymore because OT is a very physical job. And so my options were fusion or amputation. And personally, at 24 years old, I was not ready for a fusion. So I just decided to go for it and get an amputation instead. And it's been fantastic ever since, honestly.
I don't think I've ever heard a relatively new amputee say, use that word, fantastic. So you answered my next question, which was, how are you, Danique?
I am very good. I actually just got a running blade yesterday. So I ran about a mile for the first time in 4 years.
Wow.
I have a great support system. My husband has been through it the whole time with me. And, you know, I really, really enjoy being able to connect with some of my patients because I am an OT in a very empathetic way instead of just coming from a sympathetic point of view. So it's a really interesting point of view, but it's honestly been a great, I wouldn't say great, it's been a very fulfilling thing because it just allowed me to meet all these new people and really kind of gain more confidence and determination in myself.
I read a quote that said, I've never met a wise person that had an easy past.
I like that quote.
Barbie, you were going to come in for it?
Yes, I was thinking that you're sort of the epitome of what I was talking about earlier about excitement. You have
Yes.
opened the door to an exciting new path. after a lot of thought, a lot of pain, so it wasn't that you didn't go through grief and loss, but then look at you, you have a blade, you're running now, you're sort of amazing.
Exactly. I went through a whole series of 2 years of just being, you know, the first year was all about hope and kind of like, oh, the next surgery will fix my foot, the next surgery I'll be able to run again, the next surgery. So finally, at one point when I said I'm done with surgeries, I just got into these depressive cycles where typically I'm a very happy, bubbly, positive person. And I kept
Danica. We know.
Yeah.
It comes across.
Can you tell? Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, it came across like these 2 week cycles just of just depression. And I noticed it because I would like come home from work, drink a bottle of wine or something, and just, you know, not want to do anything, just want to sit on the couch. And I thought to myself one day, I was like, this is not me. This is not who I am. This isn't who I want to be. I wouldn't want to be friends with myself right now. So it kind of definitely took a toll on me. And then all of a sudden, when amputation became an option, I thought, oh, my gosh, I have unlimited opportunities now. So, yeah.
We're going to have to meet. I want to get a pint of your blood, see if that and I'm going to sell it for a lot of money. Danica, thank
you. Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I tell her I want a pint of her blood, and she says that's sweet. There's something wrong with her.
Vampire Dan.
She did say one thing, Barbara, and I want to underscore it, and it's the critical thing, and we've been implying this throughout the show. Her support system, mm-hmm. her network, her husband, her safety net. You know, she's got somebody, some people.
It's huge.
Institutions holding her
That's
through
huge.
This. It's everything. It's everything. You know, and we heard from that gentleman earlier how alone he feels. I mean, that's agony. That's agony.
I think that's a large part of my work, and I'm guessing it's a large part of yours, is helping people enlarge their support system.
Yeah. We've got Candy on the line. Let's hope our connection is better, Candy, from a few minutes ago. Hi, Candy.
Hi, Dr. Dan. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have to say I've gotten so much wisdom from you and emotional support when I would listen to you. I have to get out in my car to listen to you because I don't get you in my house, but...
Well,
anyway,
yeah, that's kind of a blessing for both of us, isn't it?
But I mean, it's just a terrible thing has happened to me so suddenly, and it really happened to my husband. I feel guilty to say it happened to me, but he had a massive stroke, and he is in very bad shape, and he has a lot of health problems. He retired, didn't even get to pick his pension options or anything, and now everything is on me to choose for him. He's in a care center. That has to be my choice. You know, it's all new to me, and I want to help him. I don't have much support. His children are not happy with anything that I have done, and, you know, therefore, you know, I'm kind of alienated from any support. And, you know, a lot of people feel like he did it to himself because he was a diabetic and he didn't watch his health. So, you know, people have an attitude like, well, what did he think was going to happen to him? And like, listen, I had that attitude myself towards him, you know, but I can't blame him for this. He's a good man. And,
right.
You know.
Right. So.
I don't know what to do at this point. And plus, you know, it's the financial, when you have to make financial decisions, I have to deal with people that sometimes their motives are not really apparent until, you know, you get involved with them and you find out it's about money, you know. So,
Candy, the first thing you said or implied when we first started speaking is there's nobody around to take care of Candy. So, aside from what happened to him, how it happened, his medical issues, where he is, decisions you have to make, all of which are very real and very painful, You called because Candy needs care and doesn't have it. Are you there?
I do feel that I really need help, and, you know, just people telling me it's okay, the decisions I'm making are okay, or, you know, I am trying to surround myself with people that know, you know, have had these experiences before.
How about people who, that's terrific. Being with kindred spirits is going to help you feel safe. How about people who love you? How many people love you, Candy?
Not too many. No, it's not that they don't love me. It's just everybody has, like, you know, I have children, and I have a mother who loves me, and she's fighting. She's doing wonderful. She's a very strong person, but she's sick herself, so I feel like she needs me also. Right. I mean, you know, she's 91, and she's alone.
Right. So, Barbara?
Candy.
It's hard to put anything on her because she's just fighting.
I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. Can you name me one person who loves you who doesn't need you greatly right now but could be a support? One, just one.
No, not really.
I think that's why you're feeling so much pain. And I don't know if you have a spiritual or religious background, that there may be personal opportunities there, or actually a community there. So, I mean, I think to look for just feeling one person that loves you changes things.
One person.
That's true. I am in a self-help group, and that has saved me. It really has.
And you have a sponsor?
I do. I do, and I have had a lot of really unconditional love from them, so I can't say that I don't have anyone. But it's kind of, you know, I wish that I always wish that there was that special person, but, you know.
That is a special person. You've got a special person in the group, and I think sometimes we so much define special person as a romantic special person, but you can have a special person who is not romantically involved with you, but they're darn special, and they help make things better.
Candy, I always say that when I am in a dark tunnel, I want somebody who loves me enough to climb in there and sit with me and not tell me there's light on the other end. And you have that person in your sponsor. So that
I do, and I also have my dogs and cats who have been just unconditional. Well, they love you, you know.
Well, there they go, and you love them too. It also counts how many people and animals you love. Also, that counts a lot,
right?
And that's very helpful. Candy, unfortunately, we're going to have to go, but I do want to wish you the best, and
absolutely,
yeah, and great care for you.
And use that self-help group right now.
Thank you so much. And you always help me, Dr. Dan. Your program helps a lot of people. Thank you.
Take care of you.
You too.
So, Barbara, question I brought up in the beginning, or not in the beginning, before our last break. When's it time to forgive? When's it time to let go of resentment, Dr. Wingate?
I think that you start the process of forgiveness immediately, and you start with forgiving yourself that you're in a situation that just feels awful. So however you got there, start with forgiving yourself that somehow, some way, you got in a situation that's awful. Now, if there's another person that angered you or hurt you, I think you have to be careful not to go to premature forgiveness, because it just doesn't work. You can stay with civil behavior. Civil behavior is almost always worthwhile. Almost always. But I think forgive yourself that somehow you got in this mess, and that's real hard. And then you can begin forgiving the other person, but you may need some real distance from that other person or situation before you can have any sort of real forgiveness.
What's that mean altogether, forgiveness? It's a whole different kind of F word here we're talking about.
It's a very important F word. There's a couple F words that you really have to watch out in transition.
Yeah.
And the other one is fear. You know, what would happen if I forgave this person? what would happen if the worst thing happens. That's fear. And I think you need to look them right in the eye every once in a while and sit with them, but then don't keep them as a constant companion. And then you need to move forward into more positive activities on a daily basis.
Yeah, I holding on to that anger is like poison.
Totally.
And it's a natural response. We hold on to that anger because it gives us the illusion of power and control over the future. And we need that in the transition.
And a lot of people are way more comfortable with anger than depression, Dan.
You think?
No, anger is motivating. Depression is flattening.
Yeah.
So oftentimes people go to anger because they just don't want that immobilization that depression brings.
The problem is you hold on to the anger that continues a relationship and continues the intimacy of that relationship. As long as you are that angry at person X, you're in relationship with person X.
Or job situation X. Say you're fired. You know, yeah. So long as you're angry at being fired, you just stay angry at the situation and you don't move on to what may actually be a better situation.
Poison. That anger is poison, almost literally.
Literally it is. It is.
Well, what do I know? I'm just a psychologist.
You know what I love, and I get to say this because you all know he's not going to be here for as much as longer, but what I love is Dan will be talking to someone, and they'll be talking, and he'll just say, "What do you want?" It just cracks me up that it's just like going through, because we psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors are known for talking.
Well, you know, and what do you want? Because, you know, that's the way my mind works, kind of. More simple than it appears on the outside. Listen, unfortunately, we're out of time. Barbara, I want to thank you. I want to thank all of our callers. And listen, a reminder, we're not done yet. I'm still going to be doing live shows through November 23rd, and then you can look for my specials. And, you know, I'm going to be continuing to do my morning edition pieces with Mike and Scott. So follow us on Twitter. We're at Voices in the Fam. You can email us at voices@whyy.org, or my webpage is drdangottlieb.com. I'd love to hear from you. Well, the engineer has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luner is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Trin Thatch is our intern. Larry Roebling produces the show. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week.